Welcome to the latest edition of the Insurers The Best Policy podcast. I'm David Bull, and today I'm joined by Richie Witt, co-CEO of Markel. In the first of this two-part interview, we'll discuss market conditions across the broad platform that Richie oversees, and how Markel makes capital allocation decisions to address opportunities in an improving market environment. We'll also be looking at fundraising in the ILS space and the evolving model of State National in the fronting business. So let's start by talking about market conditions. At Markel, you've got a platform across specialty insurance, reinsurance, retro, ILS and fronting. So you're pretty well placed to address this. Let's start with the E&S market. Is it the best E&S market you've seen in your career? Maybe you can give me an overview of what you're seeing in terms of pricing and what the main drivers are and how much of an accelerant COVID-19 has been.
Sure. Certainly, it is a hard market, without a doubt. Whether it is the best hard market I've ever seen, I would have to say no. I think the hardest of the hard markets that I have seen in my career was probably the one from roughly 2000 to 2004. This market isn't quite there yet. And I really do believe we're really in the early stages of this hard market. I think this hard market has a ways to run. And the reason I say that, you mentioned COVID-19, that's clearly a factor, not unlike 9/11 was in that hard market from 2000 to 2004. But you've also got a lot of other factors that I do not see going away anytime soon. You know, the first being interest rates have been on a course towards and actually reaching in some cases zero for 40 years. So it has been pretty much straight down for the last 40 years in terms of interest rates to where they are essentially zero now. You've got over a decade of price decreases such that many lines ended up in deficits in terms of pricing. And so that's playing a factor as well. It's been a tough run of natural catastrophe losses since 2017. And I think people are still trying to sort of recover in terms of their results as a result of those things. Obviously, COVID-19, like you say, the losses, financial markets and the economy all play a factor. And then I would just say, and I call it loss fatigue. I think insurance companies, their shareholders, ILS investors, there's just fatigue with the amount of losses that there have been over the past several years. And I think everybody's looking and saying, I need to get some price increases to get back close to my cost of capital. So I think this market has a ways to run, and I do think we're just in the early stages.
And specifically in the E&S market, I mean, what are you seeing in terms of pricing? Maybe just very brief summary across the main sort of lines.
Sure. Like most hard markets, various lines are reacting differently. Probably the hardest areas are cat property and executive risk, 20-30% rate increases are not uncommon in those areas. Next is probably your casualty and your excess casualty in particular. You know, maybe that's 10 to 15 to 20%. It's interesting. COVID, I think, has accelerated the hard market for your mid-size and larger business. I think it's actually had a bit of a dampening effect on small business, and I think that's a result of the fact that you know, small businesses have just been devastated by the impacts of COVID. A number of them are no longer around, so are not buying insurance. And a number of them just can't afford to pay the increase. And so they may be going without insurance where they can. So certainly medium-sized and large business is reacting forcefully to this hard market. Small business, not so much. I think that will follow as the economies recover. I think it will come along, but certainly not reacting like the larger business right now. Probably the only area that is still seeing rate decreases, and even there, I think it's starting to level out and could start going the other way, is workers' comp. So, you know, it is a good market right now, but it's a very area-specific market. It depends on the line of business and how people feel in terms of the rates that they're getting or were getting before.
let's touch on reinsurance for a bit as well. And I guess, you know, if you look back at some of the commentary from CEOs, either earnings calls or other forums, you know, it's been increasingly bullish on the carrier side. And so do you buy that optimism? And what are your expectations for the upcoming renewal across property, casualty and specialty as well?
I do have quite a bit of optimism on reinsurance. I do think it's interesting, though. I question at this point whether reinsurers are benefiting as much from the rate and the term improvements as the primary insurers. I think, as is always the case, there's a bit of a tug of war going on there. Primary insurers want to obviously keep as much of those improvements as they can for their results. The reinsurers obviously would like to get as much as they can for their results. And so there's a tug of war going on. This hard market's a little different than previous ones in that it hasn't been caused by capital destruction. I think it's more a result of, as I said before, fatigue, loss fatigue, as well as, you know, risk tolerance. People's risk tolerances after sort of the last few years of losses, they've gone down. So I think it is possible that you could see primary insurers, when faced with large rate increases on the reinsurance, trying to retain more. So we're going to be watching, in terms of our reinsurance operations, we're going to be watching very carefully, and we're going to support those cedents that we feel are providing us a fair share of the improvements in prices and terms that are happening in the market.
I guess that's, as a primary insurer and a reinsurer, you kind of get a good look across what's happening in the primary business anyway. So that, you know, you can probably see which, or get an idea from the market, which players are the ones who might be more likely to support there.
And I would say to this point, we have not seen as much of the rate increases in terms that we are seeing on the primary side find their way to the reinsurance contracts. I think there is a tad of a lag there, and I think there will be more catch up at the 1-1 renewals. I have no doubt there will be more catching up by the reinsurance markets at 1-1. Whether they get all the way to what the primary markets are experiencing, obviously the primary markets see it first. We'll see. But obviously, I think that tug of war will continue, as it always has. That's nothing new.
And then on the retro side, I mean, obviously you have the platform to be both a buyer or a seller of the products. And, you know, what opportunities do you see there and which way do you think you'll lean in?
Obviously, we are a buyer for certain of our lines of business. And then we are, of course, a seller through Lodgepine. It's the same market, just depends on which side you're on. And rates are going to be going up. Capacity is down. Rates are going up. That has been a difficult part of the market for the last several years, starting with the 2017 events. So we fully expect that where we need retro to support our business, we're going to be paying more, and we're likely to find it less available. As well, at Lodgepine, we are expecting pretty meaningful rate increases at 1-1, and our capacity is dear. We are not going to put it in harm's way unless we see the right prices for it.
No, absolutely. Let's sort of talk about the other leg, I suppose, of the stool in terms of State National. And well, interested in your thoughts about how, I suppose, activity has been impacted by COVID-19 there in terms of, you know, program business coming on board. And also, you know, what's your outlook for the program fronting business as a whole?
Obviously, one of the important things that fronting solutions can provide people is quick access to the market. As you are aware, as we're all aware, there are a number of entities trying to get up and running to hopefully, in their minds, take advantage of this market, be ready for 1-1. And fronting solutions are obviously a way to do that in a quick fashion. Also, I think people are really starting to realize the benefits of fronting solutions, particularly MGAs. It gives you the ability to disconnect your paper, your filings, from your capital. And so if you have changes in the panel in terms of capital, as an example, you don't have to go and refile. You know, it provides a bit of a safety net, quite honestly, for MGAs that have these programs and allows them to more seamlessly interchange capital providers without disrupting their business. And so I think that increased knowledge, as well as just market conditions, really leading to a pretty favorable market opportunities for us at State National.
Very good. Well, look, we've talked sort of individually about your different business segments and across the platform. And what I'd be interested in now is really hearing from you about how all that fits together. And I'm guessing this market opportunity where you kind of got broad hardening was kind of, you know, what you've been working towards as you've been building out your platform. So how do you address the opportunity as a kind of holistically, I suppose, as a group and decide where you want to allocate your own capital as well as third-party capital?
Sure. You know, we really believe that companies and markets that are going to win in the future are the ones that can most efficiently connect risk to capital, and that they have, and this is one of the reasons we've been building these capabilities, that they have a suite of capabilities to help clients connect risk and capital. So we've been about, for the last several years, building out an organization with capabilities that can assist in that endeavor with our specialty insurance, reinsurance, our ILS capabilities, and then our fronting solutions through State National. We're really trying to create that one-stop problem-solving shop as much as possible for clients and their risk needs. We're seeing some really good results of having those various capabilities and being able to connect them for our clients. You may have seen earlier in the year, we put together the Stratosphere Re deal, which is a way to manage the extreme tail in ILS fronting situations. And that's an issue that, you know, ILS has been dealing with from its inception is, you know, you have to find a home for that extreme tail risk. And the appropriate home, quite honestly, is the broader financial market. So we created a security where that tail risk, that extreme tail risk, could be put into the broader financial market. Examples like that, we've had examples of our specialty insurance operations working with our ILS operation, Villa, to provide solutions for our valued partners. We're seeing numerous ways in which the various pieces we've assembled can help us solve problems, customers and partners.
And in practical terms, how does that work? I mean, is it some? Do you have a sort of, I suppose, you know, a centralized function that can kind of look across those different platforms and you know, begin to have those conversations to make those kind of capital allocations?
I tell you, it's a lot easier to buy and assemble these pieces than it is to get them working together. That's where the magic happens. And we've been working hard at that, and I won't tell you that we've completely solved it, but the team, we've created a team where we have representation from each of those parts of the organization to really work on these client problems or issues that come to us and develop solutions. We're getting better at it every day, but I wouldn't tell you we've completely solved it at this point, but I think, I know we will continue to get better at it, and that really unlocks the value of the platform we've created when we can get those pieces working together to solve problems.
And when you look at, I suppose, opportunities across insurance and reinsurance and even retro, I mean, how do you sort of decide whether, you know, you want to put that on a Markel balance sheet or, you know, whether it's more appropriate for third-party capital? And how quickly can those kind of decisions be made? I mean, is it a case of almost just sort of flicking a switch and saying, oh, wow, you know, E&S property rates are going up 30%, we should allocate some more capacity here. We'll either bring in the filler or we can put some more behind the balance sheet. How does it work in practical terms?
You know, obviously you have a fiduciary duty to your ILS investors to make sure you are not putting risks that belong to them with Markel or disadvantaging them in some way in terms. So Nephila and Lodgepine, they make their own risk-taking decisions in terms of what they do for our ILS investors. If they ask our insurance operations or reinsurance operations if we can originate risk for them, we will work with them to do that. But as fiduciaries, they really have to be in charge of deciding whether they are going to allocate the ILS investors' capital. So we do have some walls there, if you will, between the operations. While we try to work together to provide solutions, we do have to have those fiduciary walls there. And Nephila and Lodgepine, they make the risk or the allocation decisions for those two operations.
Understood. And specifically, when looking at Nephila and Lodgepine and the opportunities, are you able to give any update on fundraising and maybe more generally, you know, there's, I suppose, more broadly in the sector, there's been a bit of a sort of confidence issue, particularly around the kind of collateralized space, given some of the, you know, the recent years and what we've seen in terms of performance. So is that sort of confidence beginning to be regained, do you think?
In terms of investors' appetite in ILS, when COVID hit, very quickly, people were very focused on, let's step back for a second. ILS investors, they're usually investing 1 or 2% of their portfolio in ILS. So when COVID happened and the financial markets had their hiccup, the investors were very much focused on the 98% of their portfolio as opposed to the 2% of their portfolio. So things pretty quickly froze up in terms of investor interest in ILS post-COVID. As things started to rebound in the second quarter, as the markets regained their footing and actually started making up some of the ground they had lost in the first quarter, investors' attention could return to ILS. And actually, that was a pretty good lesson for ILS, a reminder, if you will, for ILS investors. They went and looked at their statements from people like Nephila, and they were up a couple percent as opposed to down 25% on their equity portfolios. Interest has rebounded greatly, and we're having a lot of really good conversations, and in fact, we've received subscriptions. But as they should, ILS investors are really doing their due diligence. You know, as has been well documented, it's been a tough run for ILS at risk since 2017. There's been, you know, the issues of obviously the significant losses from 2017 and 18. There's been the issues around trapped capital. So ILS investors, rightly so, are really focused on their due diligence. And the good thing is we're seeing subscriptions for 1-1. So we still fully believe in the potential for the ILS market. Obviously, ILS capital has decreased the last few years given all of the challenges. I won't predict where it's going to go over the next 2, 3, 4 years, but over the next 10, 20 years, I believe that does nothing but continue to grow.
Yeah, and those subscriptions and conversations, that's happening across Nephila and Lodgepine also because, well, there's a big retro opportunity there, so I'm guessing that they are.
Yes. I mean, very good conversations and in some cases subscriptions. It's actually still a little early, and a lot of it is going to quite honestly depend on how this cat season goes. It's been very active, as we all know. Been extremely active, but to this point, while there have been significant losses, it still has not gotten to the level of a 2017 or a 2018. There have been significant price increases for this year's portfolio. I think investors are going to be watching carefully how the rest of the year goes, probably before making their final decision on 2021.
So looking again at capital allocation and going back to State National, and I just wondered, is it becoming sort of more interesting for Markel to participate alongside State National on programs in this hardening environment? And you know, I suppose the context for that is that you mentioned there's a number of new startups in play, and some of those startups are kind of, I suppose, pitching themselves more as a kind of risk-aligned hybrid model. So how does State National respond to that?
Well, State National historically did not participate on any of their programs. That was really their model. They were a pure fronting model when State National was a standalone organization. Immediately after we bought State National, we kept that in place just to allow time for State National's partners to become comfortable with the fact that State National was now part of a larger organization. And honestly, we didn't want anyone to feel that potentially Markel was, say, cherry-picking business from State National. So to this point, we have done very little participation on risk coming through State National. That's probably going to change some as we go forward, and it'll probably change on a case-by-case basis. There are some programs where the reinsurance partners would like to see alignment with State National / Markel on those programs, and we will consider that going forward. And that sort of adds another capability to the State National platform, as they wouldn't do that or could not do that before, given, you know, the size of their balance sheet. Now, as part of Markel, I think this adds another capability to their toolbox, where in the right situation, if the reinsurance partners desire it, Markel will consider participating beside them. So I think that's going to happen more and more in the future. But again, it'll be program by program. And first and foremost, the reinsurers would have to want that to be so before we would come in.
Thanks, Richie, and thanks to everyone for listening. In the next episode, which will air later this week, we talk with Richie about COVID-19 loss picks and the impact of a potential second wave. We also look at capital raising and what low interest rates mean for return expectations. And we touch on the pandemic as a catalyst for changing the industry.